very good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe, on Sunday, April 17th, 2016. You're listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Amongst our top stories this evening, as the country prepares to celebrate 36 years of independence from colonial rule tomorrow, some female ex-combatants say they have mixed feelings about the day.
Us, ourselves, who are still alive, how men are enjoying the truth of the independence. So it's a mixture of happiness and sadness. And to me, sometimes I actually forget about the 8th of April.
The Zimbabwe's Farmers Union says it will hold an urgent meeting next week to discuss low tobacco prices.
We are going to meet together with the TIMB and the buyers. What is required in that meeting is for the buyers to explain clearly how do they buy, and they should lay it out clearly to the farmers.
As the battle to bring to book agents who were allegedly trafficking women and young girls to Kuwait continues, some parents are urging for the unconditional release of those being held against their will.
Our wish is that we know who the agents are, both in Zimbabwe and in Kuwait. The agents to release these girls to come back home.
And the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions says it has set up a committee to review the Labour Reforms Act. And as usual, we give you the Youth Forum with its Tsatsenda Gumbo. As the country prepares to celebrate 36 years of independence from colonial rule tomorrow, some female ex-combatants say they have mixed feelings about the day. Ex-combatant Daphne Kanoti, who was one of the team chosen to stay with President Robert Mugabe and the late First Lady Salim Mugabe during the Liberation War, says she is still disillusioned by how her life has turned out. She says she thinks President Mugabe would have resigned by now had the late Salim Mugabe been still alive. We hear more on her views on independence.
What it was supposed to mean to me as an individual, I was supposed to be looking forward to, to be happy at the same time, rewinding the clock of other comrades. Who died during the struggle? What recognition the comrades who died in the struggle? What has been done to their families? Even us ourselves who are still alive, how men are enjoying the truth of the independence? So it's a mixture of happiness and sadness. And to me, sometimes I actually forget about the 8th of April. I don't know really what's going to happen in the next 10 years or so. Suppose the situation continues to be as it is, especially vis-a-vis the economy of the country. Because we are supposed to be celebrating, but how do we celebrate when the economy is like this, when the economy is in tatters? It's pointless. For people to eat, drink, very few people will be eating and drinking. The rest are suffering.
Do you think that you are receiving the same recognition as those others that went to stay with you with the president?
I never received the recognition I thought I would receive, just like what other comrades I was living with together with the president.
And you mentioned that at that time, President Mugabe was married to his late wife, Sally Mugabe. Did she mentor you?
Yes. My Sally Mugabe, she was a very nice lady, very, very motherly. And I would say, she was my mentor. And she even taught me social skills and communication skills. And also just to build me, to be a woman of substance, just like her. She used to say to me, you have to be confident with whatever you are doing or whatever you are saying. And I would say I learned a lot from her.
Looking back, do you think that had she lived to this day, the situation in the country might have been different?
Oh, yes, definitely. Oh, yes, definitely. I think right now, if the late Sally, if she was still alive, I don't think the president would have continued. I think she would have prevented the president from continuing to lead the country, bearing in mind the problems we are facing as a country.
That was ex-combatant Daphne Kanoti. The Zimbabwe Farmers Union says it will hold an urgent meeting next week to discuss low tobacco prices being offered to farmers. Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri speaks to the director of the Zimbabwe Farmers Union, Paul Zakaria, on the issue.
We are in the process of trying to confirm these rumors and suspicions on the ground. And once this has been done, we want to call for a meeting which is going to address this issue.
When are you expected to call for this meeting?
Between Tuesday and Wednesday. This is a very urgent issue. Between Tuesday and Wednesday, considering that we have an independent holiday in between, we are going to meet together with the TIMB and the buyers. What is required in that meeting is for the buyers to explain clearly how do they buy, and they should lay it out clearly to the farmers what procedures are followed in terms of determining the price. And being an auction, to what extent can they influence the price? And also whether the farmers themselves can influence the price, possibly by even withdrawing their tobacco.
That was Paul Zakaria, the director of the Zimbabwe Farmers Union, speaking to Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri. As the battle to bring to book agents who were allegedly trafficking women and young girls to Kuwait continues, some parents are urging for the unconditional release of those being held against their will. Over 200 Zimbabwean women were lured to Kuwait on promises of greener pastures that later turned into nightmares. 20 girls have so far been repatriated, with many more still working under harsh conditions and wishing to return home from Kuwait. We speak to a lady who wanted to be called Mrs. Mary Ndoro, one of the relatives of a girl still in Kuwait, on the issue.
They start work at 6 a.m. and they finish work at 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. They only sleep for about 3 hours. So she was complaining. She's a young girl who is just 21 years old, and this is new to her. She has never worked in that kind of environment. So she panicked. And she called. When she called, the parents went to report to the police. We advised the parents to go and report to the police. She first went to the agent who is here in Zimbabwe, the one woman that I'm talking about. They approached she said, "I don't know." And they went and reported to the police. And the police were very helpful. They called her, and this was the beginning of all the arrests. Maybe others had reported before. But others had gone to Kuwait and came back without reporting. But in this case, this woman was picked by the police, and these are issues, these are matters which are before the court, and we can't delve much on that. We have spoken to other girls who have been there. They say the agents, they want their $3,000. The only thing that she can do is to run away from that captivity. But for the niece, I think this is a new place. She had no exposure. Maybe she's locked in the house, doing the housework. She doesn't even know where the embassy is, because the Foreign Affairs is trying its best to help. But it can only assist those who come to the embassy, or you pay the $3,000 to the sponsor.
So what is your wish moving forward for these young girls and women in Kuwait, especially your niece?
Our wish, again, is that we know who the agents are, both in Zimbabwe and in Kuwait. We are not going to bow down to their demands of $3,000, because in the first place, these young girls, they didn't sign a contract here. It had been that they signed a contract here, knowing very well the conditions of service, I don't think these girls would have gone to Kuwait. Our government is doing its best. But for the agents to release these girls to come back home, and if there are any persons who can assist, one, legally, and two, by providing maybe air tickets for these young girls and tracing where these young girls are so that they come home, because most of them are not happy with the conditions. They are coming in small numbers, because out of about 200 girls, so far about maybe 30, to be generous, are back home. And some of them haven't reported to the police. They just came back, and it was business as usual. But I know it's very traumatic for a 21-year-old girl, even for a 28-year-old girl. It's a very nasty experience. It's very traumatic.
That was Mrs. Mary Ndoro, who has a niece still in Kuwait, speaking to us from Harare. The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions says it has set up a committee to review the Labour Reforms Act. Studio 7's Jonga Kande Miri speaks to ZCTU Secretary General Japhet Moyo on the issue.
There is a committee constituted by Labour, Business and Government. What this committee is precisely looking at is to reform the current labour law. After the amendment of our labour legislation, last year there was an outcry from both the business and the labour on some of the provisions contained in that piece of legislation. In fact, the employers went to court to challenge certain provisions. And also, labour also went to court to challenge those applications by the employers. So the government decided that we need to holistically look at our labour legislation, looking at what the ILOE has provided over the past years, what has been the recommendations from the ILO.
What exactly do you want reformed from this Labour Act?
As Labour, our position is that when we had this amendment last year, of course the amendment was as a result of the Chichausiku judgment. We were already in a process of reforming our labour legislation. And the process was informed by what we call the Pandari principle. We had agreed in 2014 on the 13 principles, how best do we deal with our labour legislation. What we wanted as workers is contained in that document. These issues to do with the cumbersome process of collective job action. In our view, it was very difficult for the workers to embark on a legal collective job action. So we wanted that issue to be streamlined. As workers, we wanted also to streamline the dispute resolution system. In this country, if you have a labor dispute, it takes 5 years or so to be resolved. We wanted that to be streamlined. We wanted also the issue of fixed term contracts to be dealt with. We have workers who have worked for 20 years and are deemed to be contract workers. As a result, they don't benefit from certain rights. And we wanted that to be dealt with in our piece of legislation. So we wanted our piece of legislation to be aligned to the constitution of the country.
That was ZCTU Secretary General Japhet Moyo speaking to Studio 7's Jonga Kande Miri. Coming up, the Youth Forum with Tatenda Gumbo.
You are now listening to the Youth Forum, your forum focusing on your issues today. I'm gladly joined by Sydney Chisi. As you know him, he is the director of a Youth Initiative for Democracy based in Harare. Sydney, thank you so very much for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Katenda. I hope you're well.
I'm very well. And of course, we're on the eve of Zimbabwe turning 36 years old. What's your take?
I'm actually shocked and surprised, you know. Oh my goodness. I mean, when you get to 36 and when you use the AU policy around youth, when you use the Zim policy around youth, the youth ends at 35. And between the ages of 0 to 35, people should have gone to school. In African culture, people could have got married, had children, had careers. They have got almost all of their things planned. But when you put a young person in Zimbabwe on one end and you put the country on the other end, it's really a reflection of a very sad story. You have got a young person who is still dependent on their parents. At 36, you still have got young people who have got maybe even a master's degree at 36, but unemployed. You have got a young woman who is a single mother who is struggling to get a birth certificate of a father who refused responsibility at 36. You basically have got shelterless people who do not even have a cover above their heads as we speak. We have got a young person who wishes to get a job, and the only option that they have is to struggle with the Limpopo crocodile to go into South Africa to do menial jobs.
You know, Sydney, there's been some talk, over the past few years where some say that, things were better off during the colonial era. But then there's some who shoot back and say, how dare you, because there was a liberation struggle that occurred. And, there's some of us who are born free, per se, and we don't even know what we're talking about.
I think the question is a bit of a misnomer. You know, what we have right now is a country that maybe most of the born free might not have enjoyed, given the political context that was there then. But maybe what we are beginning to show, to see, right, is because history is recorded. History has got pictures. History is graphical. History tells you the stories that you get from your parents, then they tell you that, yes, we could not get into first street, but could get to Kwataigara, we could still buy whatever we would want. We still get water, we could still get electricity. We never, if we had opportunity, our kids will still go to school and find books. You go to a clinic and still find medication. So the chances are that as young people, we reminisce on those weekends that maybe our parents experienced. But all the same, we are happy that Zimbabwe got liberation in 1980. We managed to get a majority rule against a minority colonial. But the challenge that was there was, instead of translating the freedom or the independence into freedom, what the Mugabe regime just did was to use the old Smith template. So the once white Ian Smith regime translated himself into a black, almost colonial Mugabe regime. So the struggle that young people are now faced with is that, what is the new trajectory of a new struggle in the post-independent Zimbabwe? What are the new issues that would attract young people to say, we need to fight for? So your education, your employment, you talk about equality, you need access to natural resources, you need representation in terms of participation. So all those things are new issues that might not have existed, pre-colonial issues.
And you took the words right out of my mouth, Sydney. That was my next question to ask you. What is the struggle for, young Zimbabweans?
I mean, when you look at it from a political point of view, you'd actually say that young people would want a government that resonates with their wishes. You want a government that is responsive to the issues that young people demand every day. And maybe we don't have that kind of a government. We have a government that chooses to be partisan and only rewards those who pull a line of partisan issues. If it is a ruling government, ruling party that you support, then you get all the rewards that you would want. But the real issues that also are faced with is that you go into the streets of Sakuba, Makokola, Mukoba, Mteke, Mbare, and you ask them, what are the pertinent issues that you want to, that are affecting you? They'll tell you it's no blood, Akuna Magra.
That was Sydney Chisi, director of the Youth Initiative for Democracy, joining me today. Make sure you join me next week as we continue to delve on the issue of youth and independence. And Sydney further explains the struggles that young people are facing post-independence. This is Tatenda Gumbo wishing you a happy Independence Day tomorrow, and hope you'll join me next week.
That's the news in English from Studio 7 this Sunday evening, April 17th, 2016. Stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye in Washington.